Okay. Today is April 1st, 2009, for the Michigan Writers Series. We're welcoming today Tom Springer and his book. I should have had it in front of me. I'm sorry.
Looking for Hickories.
Looking for Hickories. I'm sorry. And the word is wildness, not wilderness, which is kind of strange if you're doing a title search, because it wants to correct you for wild or wilderness instead of wildness. So that's an interesting title. Anyway, we usually gather people for the writer series to talk about. It just so happens that most people are teachers. And they teach in creative writing. We always talk about Michigan because it's the Michigan Writers Series. That seems kind of obvious in this case, as I suppose it does sometimes. But I suppose I was just going to ask about creative nonfiction. And we don't have a lot of nonfiction writers, mostly poets, storytellers, short stories, novels. So I wonder, you know, and I was going to talk about Michigan State, too, because you're a graduate of Michigan State University and a graduate degree in what?
In journalism.
In journalism. Environmental journalism.
Environmental journalism, somewhere. To be specific,
yeah.
Right.
So as the first question, how did that prepare you for the success you're enjoying now as a creative nonfiction? What do you call this? Do you call it creative nonfiction?
I think that's probably the most apt genre. You know, you can call it, it's been called nature writing, it's been called essays, generally is a form that I use, but creative nonfiction is what really got me interested in this type of writing. And what I like about the journalism school, the environmental journalism school, is that it's really a genre that allows you to use all the skills and things you use in journalism, being able to do good research, you know, being able to identify a good story, being able to, in an essay, you can quote people if you want to, but what's liberating about it, and this is what I really appreciate the journalism school letting me do, is you don't just always have to write in third person. I mean, I don't know, maybe as you grow up more, you have your own voices, your own opinions, your own experiences, and for all the values of third person journalism, I really think objective journalism is still, for all its, you know, flaws, it is still very worthwhile in democracy. There's some part of your story that you want to tell that you can't do unless you go in the first person. Mm-hmm. And what an essay allows you to do is weave your experience in through these other facts, these other points of view that you're presenting in an accurate way to try to make your point.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that much about your work history. Did you ever work as a journalist?
No, I didn't. I didn't graduate my undergrad until I was about 29. At that point, I went to a PR job. You know, I'd been sort of starving and living in bad apartments for long enough that I didn't want to go that route. So I've worked as a freelance journalist. I've never been full-time employed.
So you work currently for Kellogg, the Kellogg Foundation, right? What do you do for them?
I'm a project manager there. And one of the things, it's a grant-making organization. And more recently, what's been interesting I've got to work on, we're promoting the connection between kids and nature. You know, the book by Richard Louv, Last Child in the Woods, the Saving Children from Nature Deficit Disorder, the whole movement that's growing out of there that says, what can we do to more effectively connect kids to the natural world, not just because it's fun to do, because it's really integral to their health, you know, and how they grow up. Look at the childhood obesity epidemic as one symptom of that. But so that's part of the work that I'm doing there.
So how does that, you know, as in when teachers are here, I asked about teaching. So, and how does that inform your writing, if it does at all? How does this... Are you working outside? Are you? I mean, I've read some of your book, and it's not just about being outside. It's about people and connecting with.
Well, I think, you know, working at the Kellogg Foundation, which is basically an indoor job unless I travel. I used to be editor of a magazine and a website, so I'd visit a lot of projects. You get to talk to people, to scientists, to farmers, you know, function as a journalist working for a nonprofit organization. Mm-hmm. So it gave me a lot of background knowledge that's been useful to me.
Yeah. I understand now. So what kind of... What classes prepare you for writing a book that you might have had at MSU of creative nonfiction? Or
I think, first of all, you have to, you know, read some good creative nonfiction. You know, for me, people like John McPhee or, you know, Edward Abbey or Sigurd Olson or, you know, Alda Leopold, there is sort of a canon of books in that field that you really need to know, of course. You know, Thoreau by Walden is what everybody needs to read. So I think it's making, you know... I guess you can do it through a class. You can do it as a project of your own. Mm-hmm. Having some classes is useful, but just do a survey of, 15, 20 books in that field and get a feel for how an essay is put together and how their voice is able to emerge with a point of view.
Do you, for people that do poetry and fiction, you know, you do workshops. Do you do that sort of thing for creative nonfiction?
I haven't. I've as a student, I've attended some good ones. Ryan Magazine, they have a Wild Branch Writers Workshop. It's in various places. That's very useful to go there. And the Mid-Atlantic Writers Workshop, it is at a college near Baltimore. The name's escaped me now. It's been several years. But if you Google online, you can find some good places where you can go hear from people like Barry Lopez or Terry Tempest Williams who have mastered this craft.
Right. The one book, that we have a one book, one community thing every fall. So every freshman reads the one book. Mm-hmm. It's actually required. And they pick the soloist, the Barry Lopez book. Is that? No, that's Steve Lopez. I'm sorry. I was getting confused. But they are, Steve Lopez is more or less a creative nonfiction writer, too.
So it's the same. It's the same type of approach.
Yeah. It's becoming a more, do you feel this? It's becoming a much more popular genre.
Yes, because I know about 10, 15 years ago when I got into this, people used to talk about writing essays. They said, well, you don't say that to an editor. Their idea of essay is this hoary old thing that's going to be out there. But even you look in journalism and you see the first person mixed in. It started with travel stories. Now it's grown in a lot of other things. People don't mind it as much as they used to. They find it refreshing from this invisible news voices in the background.
How did your book come about as an actual book?
It started out as a graduate project, which I had to do, and it was this little self-published stapled thing, which, you know, was sort of like about an eighth grade kid's dream of a book. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying at the time, you know, I would like to do a book of this. And Eric Friedman, my professor, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist professor, school, great guy, said, you know, don't think about doing a book. Just think about doing some essays, get them published, take the pressure off. And so I did that. And when I had what I felt to be, you know, a half dozen good ones, I pitched them to Mary Irwin, who was an editor, University of Michigan Press. She's focused on Great Lakes acquisition. I think we talked earlier about nonfiction not being as prevalent. To my benefit, that was sort of a niche that hadn't been met. I'm a Southern Michigan writer. I'm doing essays about natural world, you know, about a part of the world that hasn't been written as much. And they were willing. They were looking for that market. And, they bought it right away. And then all I had to do was rewrite everything. And then they published it.
All you had to do was rewrite everything.
Well, it's interesting because I went through this process when I started to be an essayist where one of my advisors, Laura Julia from American Thought and Language, says, you know, these are sort of essays, but you really sound too journalistic. You have to let go and put more of the I in there. So I did that. Then when I sent them to U of M Press, she said, you know, there's too much I of you in here. You've got to sort of move that out and get more of the other stuff in here. So I had to find that balance. And once I did that, then the second, there's 20 essays. About the last 10 or 11 or so, I was able to knock out, not much problem.
So will there be a follow-up to this?
I hope so. I'm still writing essays, and, you know, it might take me a few years yet to get a collection. I think, to me, this type of writing, unlike an article where it can be sort of subject matter-driven, maybe wisdom is too strong a word, but there's some insights and perspective you just have to get through living that make an essay work, you know, and you can't always force that. So I've got some topics that I'm pursuing, but it's not on a deadline. I have another job, but I certainly intended to write another one. I would have liked to put 5 more essays in this book, but you got to, you know, hit the send button at some point and finish it off.
Are you still writing about the same geography, the same?
Yeah, it's the same geography, and as much as the geography, it's the concepts. You know, you mentioned earlier about the term wilderness instead of wildness. It's very intentional. I mean, you can find wildness outside by the Red Cedar River, 50 yards from here, in some meaningful way if you sort of make space in your life for it. Wilderness is sort of this official designation. I love that, too, but for most people, that's not really practical on a daily basis.
Man. If you have a job.
Right.
And you don't want to drive
an
hour and a half every day. All right, well, great. Anything else? You've got some, for the notable series, you've got, you say, 2 or 3 more set up?
Yeah, I just
want to place in the state.
One thing that I would like to encourage people to do, I haven't been a member of one, but last week I was at Fernwood Nature Center by Barry and Springs. I did a couple of these talking to book clubs. It's really heartening as a writer to see the growth of book clubs and people who get together in a house or some small place and discuss that. I mean, I think that's so refreshing in our culture for people to have a place. A lot of times book readers are kind of like loners, and they read these books and they try to tell people about them, and they, you know, but I hope to see more than that. And as a writer to go around and talk to book clubs, people have already read your work. That's great. You don't have to explain anything.
Yeah. Well, it's always nice to actually read to people that are, or to have discussion with people that have actually taken the time to read your work. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks a lot. And on to the reading.
Okay. Thanks a lot. All right.